Welcome to this edition of Back to Basics with Pastor Brian Broderson.
The deity of Christ is a way of speaking about the fact that Jesus Christ is not simply a perfect man, but he is what you might call the God-man. He is the man who is also God. And that is something that John brings out more so than any other gospel writer.
Today on Back to Basics, Pastor Brian begins his study in the Gospel of John. Join us as Pastor Brian begins this series with a message titled, John's Gospel. Now, here's Pastor Brian.
All right, well, let's open up to the Gospel of John as we begin our study through the Gospel of John and looking at the Gospel of John from more of the overview, kind of a look at it. There's an interesting phenomenon that has occurred in regard to Christianity. Many people in our culture and around the world have been troubled and turned off by the church. They see the church as oppressive and hypocritical. But some of those very same people are intrigued by and even interested in Jesus Christ. They find Christians appalling, but Jesus appealing. What does that tell us? It tells us that the church has evidently done a poor job of representing the Lord. I believe that if the church is going to have a significant and lasting impact on the world in this 21st century, we are going to have to shed a lot of our tradition and what you might call churchiness and get back to Jesus himself. He is the Christ, and every Christian ought to resemble him more and more with the passing of time. In 2 Corinthians 3:18, Paul said this, "But we all, with unveiled face, beholding as in a mirror the glory of the Lord, are being transformed into the same image from glory to glory, just as by the Spirit of the Lord." Here Paul tells us this. This is what he's saying. He's saying that as we behold the Lord, as we gaze upon him, we are transformed into his image. That's what we are going to be doing as we study this wonderful gospel. We are going to be getting a fresh look at Jesus and seeing firsthand what God is like. That's what I believe the Lord wants to bring to us through this study of John's gospel. He wants to bring to us just a fresh picture of himself. He wants us to just get a fresh new look at who he is. Now, each of the writers of the Gospels had a different purpose in their writing. And that becomes clear as you get familiar with the Gospels. As you read through them, you start to realize that each one of them had just a slightly different perspective that they wanted to communicate. Matthew's purpose was to reveal Jesus as the Messiah of Israel, the Son of David, the King of the Jews. And Matthew's gospel is very oriented toward the Jewish mindset. Mark's purpose was to present Jesus as the servant of the Lord. Of course, the Roman Empire was made up primarily of servants. And it seems that Mark was seeking to communicate in some way to that portion of the population. Luke subtly highlighted the perfect humanity of Jesus, no doubt seeking to appeal to the Greek mind. But John's gospel, much different than the other three, as you perhaps have noticed in reading through it. A different perspective. John's gospel reveals more than any other the deity of Christ. The deity of Christ is a way of speaking about the fact that Jesus Christ is not simply a perfect man, but he is what you might call the God-man. He is the man who is also God. And that is something that John brings out more so than any other gospel writer. He brings out the fact of the deity of Christ, that Christ was and is not merely God in the form of a man, but God in the nature of man. Not God in disguise, but God in the flesh. He did not only come among us, he became one of us, possessing as his very own a true and full human nature from its conception. In Jesus Christ, we find a real incarnation, a true and full entry into our humanity. And John brings that out in a very wonderful way. Over and over again throughout his gospel, he shows us that what actually occurred was that the Creator became a creature. Now, John begins his gospel by asserting that very thing. He says in the very first verse, "In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God." And then he goes on to conclude that section by saying, "And the Word became flesh and dwelt among us." But then John is also the one who records for us that statement of Jesus where he declared himself to be the great I am, the one who revealed himself to Moses in the burning bush. It's John who tells us that. It's John who quotes Jesus as saying to Philip, "He that has seen me has seen the Father." And then finally, John is the one who tells us how Thomas cried out to Jesus, "My Lord and my God." And so John, he brings to light, like no other gospel writer, the deity of Christ. But beside John's emphasis on the deity of Christ, he also reveals, more so than any other gospel writer, the personal and even intimate interaction between Jesus and others. The Synoptic Gospels, which is a term that's used for the three Gospels, Matthew, Mark, and Luke. Synoptic means seen from the same point of view. And as you read Matthew, Mark, and Luke, you know that it seems like you're reading the same thing over and over again. Now, the more you read them and the more familiar you become with them, you realize that there are definitely some differences. But yet there are many, many similarities, probably more similarities than there are differences. And so they are referred to by theologically oriented people as the synoptic gospels, meaning from the same point of view. Now, the synoptics view Jesus, it seems, from a bit of a distance. But John is close up and personal. Now, Matthew, Mark, and Luke, they record the sayings of Jesus. Interestingly, though, John records the conversations of Jesus. You see, there's more of an intimacy there. They're not just sort of at a distance watching and listening, and oh yeah, Jesus said this, and then he said that, and then he said this, and he said that. That's what the synoptics do, generally speaking. But John comes right in, and he's right there listening to the conversations that Jesus is having with other people and giving us insight into the dialogue that's going back and forth. And through that, you get really a more personal and a more intimate look at our Lord Jesus Christ. Think about it with me just for a moment as you just sort of scan the Gospel of John in your mind. Some of you might be able to do that easily because you've read it a number of times. Some of you, it might not be quite as easy. But, you know, if you just sort of look at it, you think that, yeah, it's true. Jesus, in John's account, he has these conversations with so many different people. He has a conversation with Nathanael. He says to Nathanael, "You're an Israelite indeed in whom there is no guile." Nathanael says, "How do you know me?" Jesus goes on to say, "Before Philip called you, while you were under the fig tree, I saw you." And Jesus is speaking intimately. There's this conversation that's occurring there. As you move on, you find another conversation taking place with one of the great rabbinic leaders of the day, Nicodemus. And it was that personal conversation with Nicodemus that has brought to us that understanding of the need to be born again, because it was to Nicodemus that Jesus said that unless a man is born again, he cannot perceive or enter into the kingdom of heaven. As you go on, you find that Jesus has this amazing conversation with a woman in Samaria. They're at a well, talking to her about water, and then more specifically about living water, and revealing himself to this woman as the Messiah. We find that Jesus has a conversation with a man that he would heal, a lame man who was seated at the pool of Bethesda. And then there is that woman who is caught in the act of adultery, and John records for us the conversation that Jesus has with this woman. And then there was conversation that took place between Jesus and the Pharisees that John records for us, a dialogue back and forth, Jesus speaking to them, them responding to him, some argumentation going on and so forth. John records that conversational thing that happens there. And then there's a man born blind. Jesus has an interesting conversation with that man. Of course, he healed that man. And then there's Martha and Mary, the sisters of Lazarus. Lazarus, you remember perhaps, was the man who died and Jesus raised him from the dead. And there's that record of that intimate conversation that took place between Jesus and Mary and Martha. And then we have in the 14th through the 16th chapters, we have the conversation that transpired between Jesus and the apostles, something none of the other gospel writers tell us about. This intimate, deep, profound conversation that occurs between Jesus and his followers. And then in the 17th chapter of John, we are given insight into the conversation that Jesus had with his Father in heaven. And that whole 17th chapter is a record of that conversation. It is literally the Lord's Prayer. The Lord is praying for his people in that 17th chapter. And then you find that Jesus has a conversation with, of all people, Pontius Pilate. And John records the conversation that Jesus and Pilate had. No other gospel writer records that. And then finally, at the end of the gospel, John records a wonderful conversation that took place between Jesus and Peter as the Lord reached out to restore Peter back into fellowship with him after Peter had denied him on those three occasions. So as we go through John's gospel, we're going to see both the glorious aspect of the deity of Christ, as John will bring that out in the places that I mentioned and subtly in other places as well. But then we're seeing Jesus in a very intimate and personal way on the human level as we go through this wonderful gospel. Now, the content of John's gospel centers around seven signs and seven sayings of Jesus. And we'll see that as we make our way through the gospel. Now, each of these signs and sayings are meant to convey a message concerning Jesus and the Father. So Jesus performs these signs, and there's a specific message that's being communicated behind each one of the signs. And then he does say certain things, and John does record some of the sayings of Jesus. But interesting to me, he doesn't record the things that Matthew, Mark, and Luke record. And Matthew, Mark, and Luke do not record the things that John recorded that Jesus said. But there are seven specific signs and seven specific sayings that are conveying a message to us concerning Jesus and the Father. Looking for a moment quickly at the signs, the first sign is that of turning water into wine at a wedding feast in Cana of Galilee. Jesus turned water into wine. And actually, as we're going to see when we get to that, this was the first miracle that Jesus performed. And people have, quite honestly, been puzzled by that. Why would Jesus perform his first miracle turning water into wine? What's the significance of that? Well, I don't know for sure, but you know, it seems to me that what Jesus was doing in that is he was letting people know right up front that God is interested in man's life. He's interested in man's experience here in this world. He's interested in man's enjoying life. You see, religion tends to be burdensome. That's sort of the nature of religion. And religion, of course, is man's attempt to try to find some way to reconnect with God. And by nature, religion is a burdensome thing. And quite often, the idea lurking behind any religion is that of, you know, rules and stiff regulations and no enjoyment or pleasure. That's contrary to spirituality or holiness. And religion historically has been a thing that's weighed men down. But you see, that's not what the gospel is about. That's not what the Christian faith is about. It's not about laying some big burden on man. And I think by Jesus performing this miracle at a wedding feast and turning water into wine, I think what he was communicating was that God is interested in man's enjoyment. God wants us to enjoy life. He wants us to enjoy the good things of life. The only thing that God really does is he takes sin out of our life. That's the thing that's ruining life. But so often people get the wrong idea. They think, oh man, God, if I give my life to him, he's going to make my life miserable. I'm not going to be able to have any fun anymore. I'm not going to be able to enjoy myself anymore. And so I've known people who have had sort of a sense, you know, that they needed to make that commitment, but they've said, well, you know, I'm going to do that, but first, you know, give me a few weeks. I got to really party up and get my quota full before I go into that boredom mode or that mode of misery. But there's nothing further from the truth. Jesus came to give us a pleasurable life, an enjoyable life. And I think that's what he's communicating there. But then we see another sign that Jesus performed, and that was the sign of the cleansing of the temple. You know, we learn from John's gospel something that we would not know from the other three. Jesus cleansed the temple twice. If you only had Matthew, Mark, and Luke's accounts, you would think that Jesus cleansed the temple once at the end of his ministry. You find that according to John, he also cleansed it at the beginning of his ministry. And what was he communicating when he cleansed the temple? Well, he was communicating that he is the ultimate authority on religion. You see, the temple in Jerusalem was the center of worship for the true God. When Jesus comes into that temple and he cleanses it, he demonstrates his authority over that temple, and he demonstrates his authority in the realm of religion. And of course, if you have religious ideas or questions or concerns, Jesus is the one who can answer those because he is the ultimate religious authority. Another one of the signs was the healing of that lame man there at the pool of Bethesda. And in the healing of that lame man who was a sinner, because we're told that Jesus said to him, "Go and sin no more, lest a worse thing come upon you." What we see in that, the message being conveyed, is God's compassion for sinners. God is compassionate. He loves sinners. He doesn't want them to stay in their sin, because that's offensive to his holy nature and it's destructive to their lives. But he does love them, and he came to deal with sin. And we see that in Jesus reaching out and healing that lame man. John does record for us the feeding of the 5,000, which the other gospel writers do also. He records for us the feeding of the 5,000, but John gives us some insights into it that the other writers don't. But in that, what we see is God's care for man's basic needs. Jesus takes this multitude of people, and you remember the disciples said, "Master, send them away. It's late, and they need food. They're hungry. They're weary." Jesus says, "You give them something to eat." They said, "Oh, we don't have anything." The Lord said, "Have them sit down." And Jesus, you remember the story, he took care of them. He fed them, and they had 12 baskets full of fragments left over. And everybody ate till they were completely filled. And so there in that, you see, in a bigger sense, God's care for man's basic need. You know, sometimes we think that God only cares about our spiritual needs. The spiritual is, of course, the priority, but God cares for our basic physical needs as well. And then there is the healing of the man born blind. And in that we see God's concern for those who are suffering. This man was suffering through no fault of his own. As a matter of fact, his disciples would ask him, "Lord, who sinned, this man or his family, his parents?" Because the rabbis in that day taught that you could be suffering the consequences of your parents' sin by being born with some physical malady. But Jesus said, no, it wasn't because of any of those things. But it was so that the glory of God might be manifest in him. And Jesus took and healed this man who had been born blind, showing his concern for those who are suffering. And then Jesus raised a man from the dead. That man's name was Lazarus. And in that, of course, Jesus is showing to all of humanity that he has power over man's greatest enemy. And then the final sign in John's gospel is that of the resurrection of Jesus Christ himself. And of course, the resurrection of Jesus authenticates his claim to be the Son of God. So these are the seven events, or the seven signs, that the gospel centers around these signs. And as we see, they're each communicating something to us. There are also seven sayings. Seven times in this gospel, Jesus uses this formula in his speech. He says, "I am," and then he adds something onto it. Now, the interesting thing about that is that this phrase, "I am," is the very name that God revealed himself to the nation of Israel by.
For the month of May, Back to Basics Radio is offering a DVD collection titled Israel on Location with Chuck Smith. This DVD set is a collection of 14 different locations in Israel when Pastor Chuck toured God's Promised Land. If you've ever wanted to visit Israel, this DVD set is the next best thing, as it reveals Pastor Chuck touring Mount Carmel, Capernaum, the Sea of Galilee, Bethlehem, and the sites surrounding Jerusalem. The Israel on Location with Chuck Smith DVD set is our gift to say thank you for your donation to Back to Basics. We encourage you to call us right now at 1-800-733-6443. or visit us online at backtobasicsradio.com to order this DVD set, Israel on Location with Chuck Smith. And when you give a gift to Back to Basics, we'll send you the Israel on Location with Chuck Smith DVD set as our way to say thank you. We do appreciate your generous support of this ministry. We'd also like to remind you that all of our other resources are waiting for you at backtobasicsradio.com or by calling our request line at 1-800-733-6443. That's 1-800-733-6443. Our desire is to encourage you in your daily walk with God. We'll continue tomorrow with more valuable insights from Pastor Brian as we study together in the Gospel of John. Back to Basics is the preaching and teaching ministry of Calvary Chapel, Costa Mesa, California.